Central here in the Mobile Kintech studio at Rogers Arena, Canucks, Colorado Avalanche. Tonight, as the Canucks will have to live another day, another game without Quinn Hughes, ended up with a 3-2 overtime loss on Sunday against the Detroit Red Wings, trying to get back in the win column there first since moving on from JT Miller. This hour of Canuck Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Brett Festerling, Canucks color analyst and also working with the Seattle Kraken. What's happening, Brett?
Hey, how you doing?
We miss you at the rink, I'm not going to lie. Randeep and Landon. They're great guys, but we miss you too.
I know. I miss the boys. I miss being around. But you know what? My memories are pretty positive because I was coming off a playoff, so you guys have had to ride out some of the other drama.
Yeah, we've had evenings where we're like, we wish we had Brett's perspective and his enthusiasm and positivity because we need it right now.
I don't know if I would have been able to stay positive through all that, but maybe you guys are getting through it here. Maybe. We'll see.
I don't know, Brad. You kind of strike me as like a glue guy. You might have been able to help some things around here.
Yeah, I'm either the glue guy or I'm the guy getting sat down because I grabbed one of them and then you're not allowed to do that anymore.
It has been a pretty wild month. JT Miller obviously moved on now. Canucks retooling, headed in a different direction. They've added Marcus Pedersen and Drew O'Connor and are continuing to look at moves. Carson Soucy on the trade block. That was the news of today. But just a thought on JT Miller moving on and where the Canucks go from here.
Yeah, I mean, you had to do it. It seems like you had to do it. They had no other choice. I hate it because I think a player like Miller is so hard to replace. That energy and that emotion and that kind of like grittiness, I guess. But it obviously wasn't working. They had to do something because it wasn't going to fix itself. I just think when you come down to, you know, game seven, third round playoffs, it's you want the prick out there, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
but it is what it is. And I think they did get deeper and they added some size and some speed. And maybe that helps them get to that point. If they don't have that tool in that point, then I don't know. That's a issue for them.
Yeah, and it's one of those things like, you know, the more we learn about it and, you know, the less we know because we don't get the full details, right?
Yeah.
It's one of those strange situations. But obviously there was a mutual feeling that this had to happen. And when you get to that spot and the rest of the team kind of knows this has to happen, how big is it to just kind of end or like finally resolve the situation, so to speak, for the group?
Yeah, exactly. Just turn the page. Just get over it. I'm sure everybody in that room is sick of hearing about it, sick of talking about it, sick of thinking about it. So it's just to turn the page and get to work and try to focus on the important task at hand, which is, you know, getting in the playoffs and getting this team on the right track.
You know, I guess, you know, one thing we always hear about JT and what we've heard a lot in the wake of the trade is he's a super competitive guy, and sometimes he can toe the line of where his competitiveness goes, right? I mean, you broke into the league in Anaheim. I'm sure those guys were competitive. Like, where is that line where you are, you know, trying to be constructive with a teammate and versus berating a teammate potentially?
Yeah, it can turn detrimental pretty quick, I guess, if the team's not there or if guys take it over the line. Now, like Sat said, it's just so hard because we don't know any of the details here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think there's teams where everybody, like if I go to the Giants in junior, we all embraced the super physical, super accountable, very put the cards on the table and you deal with them then. And it was kind of no holds bar, but we all knew that made us better. So we embraced it. I've been on other teams too, where guys don't embrace that at all. And then it just, as soon as somebody tries to hold somebody accountable or is frustrated with their play, even though it might be warranted, it just starts this riff, and then you get a split in teams, and then you have these fractured relationships and different cliques, and then that goes downhill in a hurry. And it shows you exactly this year, if you compare it to last year, how fast, you know, those relationships and that morale in the room really means at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from this point, we're all really curious to see how Elias Pettersson comes out of this. And they're so linked now, obviously, especially after what Rutherford said. And, you know, the spotlight's only getting hotter under him now, and expectations are he has to produce. And those were there before. But, you know, what do you want to see here from Pettersson the rest of this season?
Yeah, I mean, probably the same as everybody in terms of just elevating your game to what we expect or what we see. I think a lot of people are just perplexed because we've seen how good he is. And then you see, you know, some of the game now and the points and stuff, and we just know he has better. I think the Four Nations could be really, really positive for him. I really hope that that is the case, where he gets to go compete with some countrymen, maybe finds that love or that spark, or maybe, you know, you have a couple plays with guys you're familiar with, and then all of a sudden there's a confidence boost. I don't know what it is, but I think everybody wants to see more, probably including his teammates and the staff in the room.
It's so hard because I think there's a lot of people that are like, hey, like now he'll just turn the switch on. And it's like, well,
no,
I don't know. No, it's not that easy.
Yeah, it's not that easy. And it's such a confidence game, and
well,
yeah,
on top of that too, Brett, like, you know, Jim Rutherford and that piece with Gary Mason sort of alluded to Pettersson not being prepared for the season. We heard Tockett through the course of the year mention that his practice habits can be better. You know, so I think there's an element here of maybe Pettersson didn't have the best off season to prepare himself for this year. Like, if you're in that situation, like, you're not going to make up for a lackluster offseason in February. You know, like, that's already gone. It's you know, your time to improve, your time to build explosiveness, that's only happening in the summer. You're not doing that during the course of the season.
No, not at all. You just, it's impossible to put on, whether it's the weight. Like, you go through a cycle of kind of like weight and strength and then power into speed, and that takes you 3 months in the summer to do properly and to mix that in with your skating and make sure that translates onto the ice. And there's no way you'll be able to do that in the season. Once you get in season, in terms of that stuff, it's pure maintenance. It's really just trying to keep it together, stay your health, and not lose the strength you've built. But if he doesn't have that and didn't prep for it, and I think it also alludes to like his preparation for that, maybe the expectations he had for himself in terms of the deal, because now you're in the top, whatever, 5-10 contracts. You need to prep like you've never prepped before. There's going to be, you know, an insane amount of expectation and pressure on that, which you deserve if you're going to make that. So you need to take that part of your game to the next level. Obviously, he didn't.
Well, and also, as much as we sit here and talk about expectations, you know, from the organization and from fans, like from teammates, I'm sure teammates too, and not to make this about Pettersson against his teammates, but if you have a guy that you know is capable of more and he hasn't been at that level, like, I'm sure that also does irk teammates. And, you know, we don't need to get into the JT thing again, but it's one of those things where you also have to kind of buy back some credibility with the guys you're playing with as well, I bet.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if I was to guess, and that's pure speculation, which we love about this whole situation, but that's, to me, that's exactly what it's about, is just trying to hold somebody accountable for that, and it probably just went over the line. But yeah, exactly. You're expected to be that player for the team, and if you're going to be put in those positions, then you kind of deliver, and you got to live up to it, because the guys, you know, you're working hard for each other and committing or sacrificing, whether it's blocking shots, bodies, or even just the time on the power play in that spot for guys that are higher in the lineup. So if you're going to take that, like, you need to give it back. If we're going to sacrifice that and give that for the team, you need to hold up your end of the bargain, I think, is what it's about.
So they go out and they add Marcus Pettersson, and pretty good first impression there in his first game against Detroit. I think, you know, a lot of people were looking at the Canucks maybe hoping that they'd add a really solid puck mover. And you know, the one thing that's unique about the Canucks situation, I guess, is you know, you already have the best puck-moving defenseman in the world. You have the best power play quarterback in the world. Like, you don't need to go out and get a power play dynamo. You need a guy who can move the puck fairly efficiently and can do a lot of things for you on the defensive end of the ice. And I think that's kind of what the Canucks management group is looking at with Marcus Pettersson and why he ticks so many boxes for this team.
Yeah, and I love the Swedish play. Just Swedes, the system they grow up in and the defensive structure and how they learn, to me it's just, especially the D-man, it's kind of like a Volvo. That doesn't sound super sexy, but it's like, it's so dependable. It's going to go forever. It's going to be nice driving. You know what I mean? It just all around, plus he's 6'5". You know what I mean? He's going to skate well. He's just going to be solid, dependable. You can lean on him. I think he slots into the top four well. I do like this play. Like, obviously, you need to get some contracts figured out, but getting him back was a nice piece. And then on the other side of the defensive, and this is the main reason I came on the show today, is I wanted just to hear Reach talk about Mancini more. What kind of flair.
Hey, Vittorio Mancini, I can't wait for this guy to get into the lineup, you know?
Yeah, but I do love the Marcus Pettersson play, and I thought he played really well, but I think he's just going to be a very solid, dependable kind of, you know, Swedish defender that mm-hmm. can use his length but still have that skating and that IQ in the defensive structure.
Yeah, and that kind of fits the profile for this team, right? They want to have those guys.
Just quiet elegance. That's I think Marcus Pettersson's agent's going to use that when they go into contract talks.
Quiet elegance. Well, let's stick with the Petterssons. Elias Pettersson, the young defender who's played a few games, picked up a point the other night, and we'll see if he draws back into the lineup tonight with Quinn Hughes out. And we'll get to Soucy as well because there's more to his story all of a sudden. It just seems to, you know, be more and more trade speculation around Canuck players by the day, despite the fact that JT Miller has been traded. But as far as Elias Pettersson and how he's acquitted himself, for a young guy, I think he's looked pretty good, and I think he is impressing the organization. What have you seen?
Yeah, in small sample size, haven't seen him as much, but same thing, very impressive maturity for a younger player. I think he's more solid, more physical than I expected. Mm-hmm. But yes, so far, so good. And when you have young players or you have old players like Soucy, that's probably not living up to expectations for himself or for the team. That just makes more room for young guys' opportunity. And if he's playing well, then, you know, what have you done for me lately a little bit? And the young guys, that's when you're going to get time to kind of budge your way into the lineup.
What do you think about Tyler Myers turning back the clock, looking like the Calder Trophy winner from all those years ago?
Yeah, there we go. Give him some more ice. Gets going. I mean, he keeps doing it. He's playing well. He skates. Well, to me, Myers can eat up a good 18, 20 minutes every night. If he doesn't overcomplicate it, he's skating. Obviously, saw him a bit with Quinn Hughes. He looked great there just to support. Just like a young Festerling with Niedermeyer, you just yell, skate, I'm not open, get going. And Hughes goes and does his thing. So, but I've liked watching Myers. I think he's been really good, solid. And he stepped up in a big role when other guys have kind of struggled here.
It's been interesting how, you know, things have developed with Rick Tocchet and this team. And, you know, it seems like every day when he speaks to the media, he's talking about how he wants guys to get to the interior. He wants his team to attack when they have the options open to them. Doesn't want them going as low to high as often as they do in the offensive zone. And yet, every game we see the team deferring, dumping in when they've got a chance for a controlled entry or going low to high and just getting nothing out of it with a weak point shot that ends up in either a turnover that comes back the other way or whatever it may be. Where is that disconnect, and how is it tough for Tocchet right now to, you know, break the team out of some of these play-it-safe habits?
I think a part of it's the time of year. You get to a certain time of the year and it becomes kind of autopilot, and you lean on some of these things that just seem to work in terms of not necessarily scoring, but not giving the puck up. or not turning it over, because your big thing is trying to guard against whatever it is, neutral zone turnovers or not getting it deep and being that player. But what I did like, and one of the reasons or one of the ways to get out of it, is when you, I think you saw with Hedl and O'Connor in the lineup, you saw Hedl go to the net more low, create some offense off of that. They both carried the line a couple times, made plays off that way, getting to the middle. So you see that excitement and energy come back in kind of the dog days of the schedule for new players that are trying to prove it to themselves. And then tonight will be a fun one to watch, because does that rub off on the other, you know, the other teammates? Now you got some interior competition, guys are doing certain things that looks better and the coach wants that, maybe he plays them a bit more. Does that rub off on your Garlands and your Joshuas and your Suters and Blugers? Do they try to carry it more, make some more plays, get that speed going, and even get into the net? That's what I was most impressed about with Hedl the other night, just coming off the wall, attacking more middle and not doing your right, just the standard up to the point, go to the net, gets blocked, or it's one and done, or whatever it is. So hopefully that energy with the new guys trying to, you know, prove that they belong kind of rubs off on the rest of the crew.
Yeah, absolutely. We're in conversation with Brett Festerling here on Canuck Central. And, you know, I kind of mentioned that Carson Soucy's name is in the trade rumors today, and some reporting about him being on the block, but he has a no-trade clause. And Pierre LeBrun reported that there is a reluctance from him to perhaps go yet. He wants to make it work here in Vancouver. And we talked so much last year, Brett, about how well he played. He was so great for them in the postseason. And it just hasn't happened this year. Like, how much of it do you contribute to, you know, it just being difficult to have a bigger role next year, but also just the volatility year to year for defensemen in the league sometimes?
Yeah, sometimes it's just, it's, you know, it's tough. There's like a switch in team or your partners, or you get on a bad stretch and confidence is thin. But yeah, last year it seemed like every time he got in the lineup, because he'd be hurt, but he'd get in the lineup and he'd come off of missing 10 games and he'd be one of the better players out there. And he'd show some skill and some poise in tight areas as a big man and skate well and turn. And we just haven't seen it this year to that level. I'm not sure why, but it can't yet. Yeah, from year to year, you know, some of that, the confidence and the margin is so fine in terms of whether you're playing on the right side. Sometimes it just feels like everything you do, you're a couple inches off or a foot in the wrong way. And it seems like Susie's in one of those quicksand times where the harder he tries, the worse it gets.
So you're covering the Seattle Kraken now. Not going to call you a turncoat, but you know, we like that you're doing well and covering more teams in the league. But it's a really interesting team, because I think a lot of people are expecting more out of the Seattle Kraken, and really, yeah, like you can't just hope and pray for a breakout for young players. Like, this team, I look at it and it's screaming out for Shane Wright or Matty Beniers to take that step as young players, and they're still so young, 22, 21 years old. It's just not happened yet, and that's why it's been so difficult for this team to take a step closer towards the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think they have took a step. Maybe not as much as they'd want, but Kakko's been a huge addition. Kakko's been great coming over. I think that's allowed Matty Beniers to have more confidence and somebody to play off of and watch. So him with Schwartz, that to me looks like the most solid line they've had in a long time, in terms of every time they go over the wall, there's something being creative or plays you can pick out that are good hockey and smart hockey in the way they want to play, that goes to their identity. Yeah, Shane Wright's an interesting one. He's really skilled. He's obviously got a nice pedigree, captain of a World Junior Team Canada that won on home ice. And he shows a lot of bright spots in terms of his future. Him and Tolvanen have got some good creativity, but I just don't know if they have the high end to make room for them to screw up almost. Does that make sense? Like they don't get to, they're so much pressure on them to perform, because there is kind of four lines that are very equivalent. Maybe there's a separation now in the Kakko line, but You have a lot of, you don't have the high-end talent, the PD's killers. So a lot of that pressure trickles down into a Beniers who, you're like he says, 22, but he's playing their top center and he's doing well with that line. But it's a lot of pressure on those young guys when you don't have a lot of because they're leaned so heavily on with that team. But when that team puts it together, those guys can look really good. They just need to play 20 guys because they don't have that super high end.
Brett, we love you. We love the insights. Thanks for this today. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
There he is, Brett Festerling, analyst. Sometimes here for our Canucks games on Sportsnet 650 and also with the Seattle Kraken. J-Dog, the car hog, missed Festy. So he's happy to hear Brett Festerling back on Sportsnet 650 with us here on Canuck Central. We're always glad to have Brett Festerling on. One day we'll ask him about how the whole dynamic between Evander Kane and Dustin Byfuglien and Blake Wheeler played out in Winnipeg. Though I think it was like the early days of Evander Kane,
yes,
Dustin Byfuglien and Blake Wheeler when Brett was there before things went haywire a couple years later. All right. Couple things here on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Lawson Crouse is a healthy scratch,
yes.
Boys. We're going to get to that in the Canuck Central Roundup. Didn't end up getting to it. Ran out of time. Andre Tourigny, coach of the Utah Hockey Club, said this. I will say it like he told me. I made my bed and I have to sleep where I made my bed. End quote. And he went on to say, Crouse is an important player for us. He's a great player for us, a great leader, a guy I like a lot. But it is what it is. It's a coaching decision. Obviously, going through it a little bit right now is Lawson Crouse, not playing all that well. A lot of changes over there. Obviously, having to move from Arizona to Utah. He's got two more years at 4-3, 27 years old. Has been a pretty good power forward, 6'4", hefty guy. Can score a little bit, hits a lot, and I'm sure if it didn't work out in Utah, they wouldn't have any shortage of suitors for Lawson Crouse.
No, there just aren't enough guys like that around, and his contract's pretty good too, right? And the potential is still very high. He's had a tough year. I mean, he only has 7 goals so far this season, and he's scored 20 goals in 3 straight campaigns. So with the combination of his size, his physicality, and being able to score 20 goals plus, that's huge. You know, like, there aren't enough guys like that to go around the National Hockey League. I'm a big fan of Lawson Crouse's game, but I have a hard time seeing them still moving off of him. I think the value is just too good on his contract.
It's too good, you know, and I think if anything, Utah is similar to the Canucks, probably big game hunting for a big-time center.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, maybe they move him as part of a deal, a package to get something along those lines, right? But I don't know if you can just swoop in and just poach him singularly for some futures or any kind of middling prospects, so to speak, or middling assets.
Sat was on it before anybody. Rebuilding is hard.
And, it's very difficult.
You're seeing it with Utah. You're seeing it with Anaheim, Chicago, who's still early in their rebuild, and Connor Bedard is already frustrated.
Oh, I know.
It's like, man, it's going to take a while, and it may take a while. You might feel like you're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, and then all of a sudden there's darkness again. So it's
there's so many stages you have to go through. A team has to come together, and then you have to go through the experiences of a young team. Yeah. They have to learn the hard way, go through the ups and downs, but then there's a lot of losing, and losing creates fractures and problems, and then you get to situations where sometimes guys want out or they don't get along, and you have to make moves. So I'm not saying you shouldn't rebuild. I'm all for rebuilding at the right time for the right reasons.
Yeah.
But we just have to get off this whole idea of, oh, just rebuild. You'll be good in 5 years. Like, it's not even close to being guaranteed. It's so difficult to do.
And, things look good right now for San Jose.
Well, so they did Chicago last year, remember?
Things look good for Chicago last year. It was exactly what I was about to say. Like, people were all positive about where Chicago was, and then they add a couple of pieces in the summer, looking like they're going to maybe take another step further, and they're back down in the basement.
What the conversation around Blackhawks this year was, they're not going to be bad. They may not be good, but they're going to be probably around 500, kind of battle and be interesting, and they've been downright bad.
So I did want to spend a moment on the Buffalo Sabres, but we are pretty much running out of time. So the Buffalo Sabres held a team meeting today, or recently, after Tage Thompson got absolutely obliterated by Stephen Nason the other night, and nobody did anything about it.
Do they hate Tage Thompson?
They had a bunch of guys on the bench that were like, I would have done something, and nobody did anything.
No, it didn't.
And this is a running joke around the Sabres that they never stand up for each other. And we hear it all the time when we do Canucks games, and there's never enough response, and how can you let somebody do that to your captain? And it happens. Sometimes, genuinely, guys don't see what happens on the ice, and then next thing you know, somebody's getting kicked off the ice, and it's like, well, I don't know. I didn't even know what happened.
Right, yeah.
But I think it's hilarious that they start their game against the Columbus Blue Jackets today and somebody goes and picks a fight with Matthew Olivier and just gets absolutely dusted. It felt similar to Vincent Desharnais getting beat up by Tanner Jeannot earlier this year against the LA Kings.
Yeah, but it was like, tough. It was like, at least you tried.
Staged fight, and then you end up just getting absolutely demolished in it. I don't know if that's going to do anything in the future.
It's a tough look. Yeah, I'm not sure it does any, but I think more than anything, they needed to kind of show themselves that they can respond.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that helps morale when you respond and you get fed.
Maybe try not to pick a fight with Matthew Olivier, like the number one heavyweight in the league right now. I don't know. Just a thought. All right. We'll leave that there. Dave Babich is going to join us, Canucks alum. He's going to check in with us, his take on where the team goes from here as well. Plus, you'll hear from Rick Tocchet. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. This is Canucks Central.
Catch up on what happened in Vancouver sports with Halford and Brough in the morning. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour number two, Canucks Central, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Mobile Kintec studio at Rogers Arena. Getting ready for the Canucks and Colorado Avalanche. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. No Quinn Hughes for the Vancouver Canucks tonight, so you will only see one half of the two best defensemen on planet Earth here in the building this evening. Thatcher Demko getting the start in goal for Vancouver, and the Colorado Avalanche running a two-game shutout streak. So the Canucks struggling offense in a tough spot going into this one tonight. We'll see how it plays out. Let's bring in our next guest, Canucks alum, the great Dave Babich, joining us. What's happening, Babs?
Not much. I'm waiting for you guys to call me.
Yeah. Oh,
I was losing the breath there. I'm like, holy, I don't have anything else to say.
Well, he left all the good takes for you, Babs.
Oh, well, you know what? Don't ask a question that you don't want an honest answer. So, no, I'm kidding.
You know, when we talked a couple of weeks ago, obviously the JT Miller story and what's been going on with the Canucks has been in the forefront for everybody. And the trade happens on Friday. Canucks going in a new direction. They add a defenseman as well in Marcus Pettersson. So there was a lot, a big flurry of moves. And Sat and I were just talking. It's kind of similar, or feels somewhat similar to 94 when you guys were kind of going through it that year and made a couple of big moves during the season made the one big move that sort of set you onto a better path.
Well, yeah, we made a few moves, but we didn't get rid of Pavel. No, you know what? I get it. I mean, it's just, you know, things have to happen. They certainly improve, like, and I no disrespect to anyone, you know, the bottom six forwards and you know the bottom four defensemen, like, I mean, they're tight there now, which is great, you know, because that's a big part of winning. But then you got to have the big boys, you know, do their thing too. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, it ultimately comes down to Pettersson, right? Like, he's the guy that has to kind of lead the charge here. And, you know, you joke that Pavel was still there, but, you know, Nedved was a big part of that team, the 92-93 team, right? Had a good year and then had his whole contract situation. Like, does a spark like that of making a trade, does it help you turn the page when there has been that much strife and discontent and also underachievement?
Well, I hope it does. You know, I think, you know, everyone on the team, no matter if it affected them or not, and it does affect them one way or another, good or bad. You know, when all that stuff is looming over the team's head of, you know, talks of trades and, you know, obviously, you know, management wasn't happy with the way things are going, and they obviously shouldn't be. But you know, people were just waiting for the axe to fall, and you know, that one might have been a surprise to the most. You know, that axe falling that way. But you know, then again, you know, you certainly have to take what's presented to you, because you know, sometimes if you try to fabricate something, you know, you're not normally on the winning side of a move like that.
Yeah, we know JT was a hard on his sleeve kind of guy, and really often the term was emotional leader on the ice for the group. Does somebody have to step into that role? Does it happen naturally? Do you need, because Quinn Hughes, you know, for as good a captain as he is and everything he does leading the team on the ice and with his play, he's not, doesn't always feel like the most vocal player. Do they need somebody to step into what JT was to this team?
Well, you know, because, you know, I'm not in the dressing room, nor are you guys. It's hard to tell, you know, who was on the peripheral of what JT's message was. You know, there could be lots of guys doing it. And I know, you know, even in the 90s, we had lots of leaders that, you know, didn't need the kick in the arse to get going. You know, half the team were first rounders, and you know, they had some struggles at other places, and they figured it out when Pat took a chance on them. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, quiet guys are quiet guys. You know, if you're quiet in the dressing room, you better be doing something on the ice as a leader, because you know, even Gladiator, what is it, Gluteus Maximus, whatever the hell his name is, you know, pretty quiet guy, right? I don't know, you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty quiet guy. You know, he gets in the ring there, picks up the dirt, you know, rubs it on his hands, totally different person, right? You know, so, you know, there has to be, you know, personality changes at different times of, you know, either you're preparing or you're on the ice. So, you know, and you can't just make that up. It has to be inside somebody.
Yeah.
You know, JT's, it's a big loss, but you know what? You know, you make decisions based on making the right decisions for your organization and your team. I know he was him and his wife are great off the ice, and I think that, I don't know if anything's been said about that, but they did a lot of things that a lot of people don't know about. And it wasn't, you know, orchestrated by the team, which a lot of the things are, just because that's just the way things work. But you know, so the community's going to miss them, and you know, I hope they don't forget about them. But the team has to obviously move on, and you know, they got to make the playoffs, because you just never know. Now you got a better grinding team,
yeah,
overall. And the big boys got to score when they get the chances.
Yeah, like we saw the other night, right? I mean, it was 2-2, a couple of chances, odd man rushes in the third and in overtime, but weren't able to hit the net or weren't able to cash in. If they do, we're having a different discussion, right? But as far as you mentioned, the defense looks a lot better with Pettersson, and unfortunately, we're not going to see Quinn tonight, and he missed last game too. But, you know, as a defenseman, and you've been a guy who's, you know, been up and down, right? I mean, you were number one defenseman, put up a lot of points. You play the shutdown role. You play the linchpin role. But for a team that already has Hronek, has Hughes, how much can a guy like Pettersson kind of put everything into place if he plays like a good puck-moving, shutdown PK defenseman?
Well, I think it helps. Look what happened with Myers the last few years. Hmm. I mean, a couple of years before that, people were wondering, like, oh my God, like what happened? And like I said, and again, no disrespect to him, because, you know, rookie of the year, all of a sudden, you know, new coaches come in, and you know, different mentality of maybe taking care of the D, he's basically just doing the basic things, but he's doing them so well now, instead of, you know, trying too hard. And, you know, now he's, you know, he's playing, if he does have an opportunity to move up, he does. If he doesn't, he doesn't, you know, and he's playing strong on his end. If Pettersson can duplicate that, you know, then you got a top four that's pretty darn good.
How would Dave Babich defend Nathan MacKinnon?
Oh, I'd run him right off the third. I might miss him, but he would know. He would feel the wind going by him. I might be minus one right off the start, but yeah, no. You know what? I remember when I used to, you know, when Pavel was around, and he used to, like, I don't know if I told you guys, but so in practice, he would always want to go one-on-one against me, and I wasn't sure why. But so we always go one-on-one, and I knew I had to work hard. And most of the time, with guys like that, you try to back up as fast as you can and not hit your goalie and make sure you're on the D side of them. Because, you know, those guys, those type of players are so good. They're not one-dimensional. You know, McKinnon can stop up and he's got a rifle of a wrist shot. You know, most of them are going bar down. So it's tough to defend you. But, you know, I think it's more by committee. So even if a defenseman is on the right side of the McKinnon, you got to have some side pressure or back pressure on him. And, you know, make him make plays he doesn't want to.
Before we let you go, Babs, Canucks alumni, I know, just looking at VancouverCanucksAlumni.org, it seems like they're just opening up sponsorship opportunities for the Great Canucks Alumni Golf Classic this summer. It's one of the great things you guys do in the community, one of the great upcoming events for this year.
Yeah, no, we opened up for that. There are, you know, the foursomes are going to be sold here, I think, starting beginning next week, and it'll be on the same website. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. Like I said, we're at UBC this year, and we're really looking forward to that.
Course, yeah.
Yeah, you know what? It's treated me well. I beat my kids there all the time so far. So I don't have to, if they beat me there, you know, at any time, I might just sell my clubs and quit. But no, but we're really excited about it. You know, we have opportunities for you know, some different sponsorship there that we didn't in other places. And yeah, we're really looking forward to it. It's kind of our kickoff, you know, kind of at the end of the hockey season or towards the end, and then to the beginning of summer. And yeah, we're looking forward. I hope you guys are there. Like I said before,
yeah.
You know, hopefully you guys don't cheap out on us, but yeah, but no, we're looking forward to it. And like I said, go on the website. It's going to be a good one.
Babs, we always appreciate the time. Thanks so much for this.
All right, guys. Have a good one today.
There he is, Dave Babich, the great Dave Babich, joining us here on Canucks Central. And again, VancouverCanucksAlumni.org. You can get started there with sponsorship opportunities for the Canucks Alumni Golf Classic coming up this June at UBC Golf Course this year.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans. The People's Show with Vic Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in on Canucks Central, it's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, in the Mobile Kintec studio. We're at Rogers Arena. Canucks taking on the Colorado Avalanche. They're holding the first wild card spot. Canucks trying to get back into a playoff position after making some pretty seismic changes over the weekend. The big trade, JT Miller going to the New York Rangers, and joining us now to talk about it, Arthur Staple of The Athletic New York. Thanks for this, Arthur. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are we doing?
Yeah, we're doing all right. Still the dust settling from the trade over the weekend, and it felt like you know, the destination was always JT Miller's first choice to be a New York Ranger. What finally got this across the line? As you wrote at The Athletic, a 3-year journey for Chris Drury to get JT Miller back on the Rangers.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine it was a few factors, maybe one of them, you know, a bit more urgency on Vancouver's end to try to get a resolution here and figure this out before, you know, still trying to make the playoffs and still trying to remake their team and make sure that they're viable. And the Rangers, you know, I think they were looking to acquire JT Miller, you know, as you said, back in 21-22 when they were having a great season, and even this year when they've been having a pretty terrible season by their standards. You know, Chris Drury, I think, identified JT Miller as a guy who could come in and help change the culture. I know that's kind of a well-worn phrase, but in line with some of the other moves they've made already this year, trading their captain, Jacob Trouba, trading Barkley Goodrow back in the summer, trading Kaapo Kakko, also just after the Trouba trade, really trying to remake that room on the fly. And I think Miller was just the guy that he had identified early on in his, mm-hmm. in his GM tenure as a guy who could really help change things around in spite of all the stuff that had been coming out of Vancouver. I think he was still pretty resolute to do it and didn't give up anything huge, that at least by the Rangers standards, that they felt to make it happen after a lot of different iterations of that mm-hmm. trade over the years.
And we know that, you know, you outlined it really well, what happened 3 years ago and, you know, how they revisited it multiple times. And it seemed like a month or so ago, they were very close to getting a deal done. And there's been a lot of different reports about what got in the way of that deal. But ultimately, why do you think the last time they were so close, they ultimately didn't get it across the line?
You know, I'd heard a couple different things. You know, one, I think we'd reported with Tom Drantz that, you know, there was the protection around this first round pick was in dispute. I think I'd heard maybe that the Rangers had gone back and asked Vancouver to retain some salary. That certainly seemed to would scuttle it, since that was never really Vancouver's option to try and do that. So, you know, and I think some of the names have changed quite a bit. You know, I think Ryan Lindgren was in it a few trades ago, and I know Vancouver was interested in Drew Fortescue, who was a third round pick, who's playing for the number one college team, Boston College. You know, and they settled. I think Philip Hedel was a guy that Vancouver liked for a long time, and despite some of the concussion concerns, and I don't think the Rangers were very excited to part with Victor Mancini, who really kind of came out of nowhere this training camp and ended up making the team out of camp when they had an opening on D. But I think it's a deal that the Rangers were obviously comfortable with, and maybe that was the comfort level wasn't quite there on their side all the way along with some of the different versions. And maybe this was the one that finally pushed across, and maybe the thought that some other teams might get involved. Like you said, JT Miller, I think, always wanted to go to the Rangers, but I think he was so eager to get it done that maybe some other teams, maybe you think Columbus, close to his hometown, could get involved, Dallas maybe, before they opted to go with Mikael Granlund. So I think there were starting to be some options and some urgency ahead of the Four Nations, when maybe teams are starting to think about it a little bit more, get closer to the deadline, more things open up. So I guess the time was right.
Yeah, we had heard that JT was willing to open up his options and willingness to go to other places in order to get a move done as time was going on. And I guess, you know, you said Chris Drury was still resolute in wanting to acquire Miller. And I guess I wonder, you know, given everything that happened here in Vancouver, the dispute with Elias Pettersson, whether how much of that was on JT himself, I guess is to the eye of the beholder and those that know the true details of the story. But was there not any trepidation as to what exactly went down and why JT was in need of this change of scenery so badly?
You know, I think there's still plenty of guys in that room, and Chris Drury is one of them, as he was the assistant general manager for at least part of the time that JT was here when he was originally drafted by the Rangers. Chris Kreider's still here, Mika Zibanejad's still here, and Vincent Trocheck, who's one of his closest friends from childhood back in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. I think it's well known, leaving aside the Pettersson-Miller dispute, feud, whatever you want to call it, that became untenable. You know, I think everybody knows what kind of personality JT Miller has. He can be a bit abrasive. He's tough. He can be tough on his teammates. He's tough on himself. He's just a hard-nosed guy, and obviously that intensity, you know, I'm sure Rick Tocchet was happy to have it, but I think a lot of other teams would like to have it too. And the Rangers felt like their room needed a bit of that. You know, I think Jacob Trouba was a good captain for them, and you know, probably his salary cap outstripped some of the needs they had as captain, and that was kind of the beginning of the end for him in the summer when he wouldn't play ball and try to, you know, get himself into a position to be moved as the Rangers were trying to move some money out and make some changes ahead of July 1. They weren't able to do that, so Drury decided to do it in season, maybe a bit awkwardly, but got it done. And I think the way that the room reacted, the 4-15 stretch they went through in December, kind of showed, I think, to Chris Drury that they need someone who's a bit hard-headed in that room to kind of get everybody moving. And again, JT Miller certainly fits that bill, maybe a little too well in his time in Vancouver and causing a little too much of a rift. But I think with a room that the Rangers have where there's a lot of their long-term guys are not necessarily rah-rah, in-your-face type guys. So I think they just identified this is the guy we want to have, and they seem to do their homework on the whole situation and feel like a change of scenery would do them some good and also still bring that intensity, that fire that the Rangers feel like they really need.
You mentioned for the Rangers standards, they weren't too worried about what they gave up in the trade. And, you know, it's only been one game here, but Filip Hedl really excited the crowd here at Rogers Arena with scoring his goal. But he was skating fast through the neutral zone, creating scoring chances, being aggressive. He played 20 minutes in the game. And there's a lot of excitement already over the player that he might become. Ultimately, what were the main reasons why he was never really elevated past a third line or secondary role with the Rangers? And do you think he has potential to grow into being a second line center?
I think he does. You know, I think on a different style of team, obviously, when you have Mika Zibanejad, who plays in all situations, and, you know, this year he's having a very down year, but certainly he's lived up to a guy who can be a number one center. He's certainly not in the upper echelon of number one centers, but played a lot of minutes, defensively responsible. They signed Vincent Trocheck. You know, I think when Hedl missed so much time last year with concussion symptoms, and he's had some concussion issues, and even this year having missed a couple of games left in the middle of the game, you know, there's been concerns around concussions. They're not concussions, and I know that Vancouver did their medical diligence on him and felt comfortable with the situation, and you know, Phil himself has said to the media in New York, it's not a concussion, it's a different issue, and I'm hoping to talk about it soon. He ended up being traded, so maybe he'll talk about it in Vancouver. But my understanding is it's not necessarily concussion related, and I think that's the thing, the history with the Rangers, where he's missed so much time because of concussions and the concerns around them. You know, I think they felt like there was a few stops and starts with his comeback last year after, you know, he was out after 10 games and didn't come back until the playoffs and played one game and really wasn't in the kind of shape you need to be in to play a deep playoff run. But when he's on, you know, I think back to that 2022 playoff run where the Rangers kind of surprised the league and went to the Eastern Conference Final and went up 2-0 on Tampa, playing on what they called the kid line with Kako and Alexis Lafreniere. Hedl was, you know, playing at his peak, a guy who, you know, came in at 18 years old to the Rangers, and in his first training camp conditioning drill was skating faster than Michael Grabner, one of the fastest guys in the league back in 2017. So the Rangers have always known the potential is there. I think it just never was quite fulfilled, and maybe similar to Kako, that they felt like he's not really going to fulfill it here. They put too many other veteran guys in front of him and kind of felt like he's not reliable enough health-wise and not necessarily reliable enough at all ends of the ice to be an all-around player, to be in the top six. And, you know, I'm sure he's motivated to prove that feeling wrong and motivated to stay healthy. And certainly being in a new place, it's worked very well for Kako, who's been lighting it up on the top line in Seattle. So I'm sure he'll see that and says, I'm going to try it in a different place and see what I can do. And I'm sure his speed and his offensive skill will be welcome there for sure.
Well, he seems very excited about the opportunity and was very excited, even though they lost, about how that first game went. Now, the other player they got was Victor Mancini, and right-handed defenseman who's still very young, and he only played 15 games. But from what you saw from him, what stood out? And ultimately, you know, can he be an intriguing piece for the Canucks in the future?
He's a young guy who kind of traveled an interesting road in his amateur years. He spent a couple of years in Sweden, a connection through his dad, who was a prominent coach in the U.S. college and at the USHL level. Played on a Swedish junior team with a few of the young, skilled guys that are in the Red Wings system now. I think it really helped his offensive game because he's a very steady defensive player. But I think, as he told me in training camp, skating was, you know, something that he needed to work on, and obviously you're over in Europe with some highly skilled guys who can skate really well. It certainly helped him target that, and, you know, and playing at a smaller U.S. college program as he did. I think he kind of built his game in a bit of obscurity. The Rangers kept good tabs on him. He was, a mid-round pick. But when he came in at the end of last season to play a few AHL games, they really liked what they saw. And in development camp and training camp, he just looked a little bit more fully formed than even some of their defense prospects that have spent a little bit of time in the AHL already. And it was certainly a surprise to people around the league to see him in the opening night lineup in Pittsburgh with Ryan Lindgren out. But he certainly earned it, and he was able to play both sides, played his offside pretty well. I think he really got a real taste of what the NHL could be like in those first few games. So I think that experience will serve him well, and certainly playing on a team, you don't want to identify anybody he's going to play with, but they've got Marcus Pettersson if he stays. Quinn Hughes, these are guys that can complement his game pretty well. He's a very steady guy who skates well. He reminded a lot of Rangers people of Braden Schneider, who ironically was a defense prospect back 3 years ago. That was the holdup of the initial JT Miller trade. That was the guy that Vancouver wanted, and there was no chance that the Rangers are doing that. So that maybe they got Braden Schneider light in Victor Mancini, and we'll see if he comes up and plays any games this year and where he goes from here.
Hey, Arthur, really appreciate the time and the insights. Thanks for this.
You got it, guys. Anytime.
There is Arthur Staple at Stape Athletic. Some really good piece and work on the JT Miller trade. He goes inside the JT Miller trade from the Rangers' perspective. You can read that with an Athletic subscription available now. And, it is interesting because how things obviously unfolded with JT. And, yeah, we don't have the details, but obviously we know there was the rift with Elias Pettersson that was a big part of JT being moved on here from Vancouver. But it wasn't the only thing. Given the 10-game absence that he had as well, there wasn't any shortage of teams still willing to at least look at Miller as a potential acquisition. Of course, he's a star player, but, it just goes to show how strong his reputation was around the league. That team still didn't have much hesitation in wanting to at least explore the idea of JT Miller on their club.
Anytime you're a 6'1 center who's over 200 pounds, you're physical, and you put up 100 points, teams are going to at least take a look at it, right? And I think when you look at the teams that had interest and the teams that really pushed hard, the Rangers were probably the most aggressive team here, right? There's also a real need and a want for that type of personality with their team. There are other squads interested, but they were not willing to pay a price for it and said, hey, we might be willing to take on the contract and the risk, but we're not paying for it.
Yeah.
We're not paying anything significant for it. Whereas the Rangers, they weren't turned off by JT's personality. If anything, like Arthur mentioned, they were enthused by it. They thought maybe this is the type of personality we need in this room.
Yeah. Remember JT from his first go-around with the Rangers? He was obviously drafted by them.
Yeah.
Drury was the AGM, came up with guys like Kreider. And obviously, Vincent Trocheck described JT as his best friend in the whole world. So to get the opportunity to play with your best friend in the whole world, I'm sure he had nothing but glowing things. Chris Drury just goes down to Vincent Trocheck. Hey, Vinny, what do you think of us? JT? Yeah. Whatever you got to pay.
Do it.
Do it. Whatever you got
to
pay.
Well, we heard that Elliot reported the Canucks had told teams to not tamper with JT Miller. Are they referring to Vinny Trocheck blowing up JT Miller's phone?
Can we make this happen? Is this going to work? Is this real? Interesting that the Rangers are choosing, hey, JT, he's had some pretty good line mates. Him and Besser formed quite the duo, but Panarin, JT, and Mika Zibanejad is what the Rangers are trotting out as their top line right now.
Yeah, and JT's been tremendous. I mean, had 4 points in his first two games, making an impact, and that line looked a lot more dangerous. And JT's that type of player that will really drag guys along with him when he's on top of his game. And the first couple, he was really engaged with the New York Rangers. And the question with JT to me was never, is he going to find his form right now? I think that was always going to happen, whether it was Vancouver or elsewhere eventually. It's just about everything he's gone through and the way he plays. Now that he's into his 30s as well, how many more years of this level does he have left?
Yeah.
At least a couple more, but how many more, right? And when you look at the Rangers team, you can say the same thing about Zibanejad and Kreider. So your kind of window is with these guys anyways, and you're adding another player who fits into the same timeline.
Get in your text, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Got a little bit of time here before we fire it up for the pregame show. Canucks, the Quinn Hughes-less Canucks going up against the Colorado Avalanche tonight. You'll get a firsthand look at how Martin Nichas is fitting in with the Colorado Avalanche after they made their big move with Mikko Rantanen headed to the Carolina Hurricanes a couple of weeks ago. This text from Rager on JT, he'll drag them to be the best they can be or the absolute shell of themselves after a time. You know, that's going to be interesting. I mean, right now the Rangers still do have a pretty big hill to climb to get into the postseason, given how many teams are fighting for those wild card spots in the Eastern Conference. No guarantees, and you know, that's the reason why that first round draft choice is so very valuable. And I think one thing you have to remember about the Marcus Pettersson acquisition, and yeah, it was a big price to pay with that Rangers pick given where they currently sit in the standing sat, but there's a big value in moving off of Danton Heinen and Vincent Desharnais' contracts, not just for this year, but also for next year. Similarly to how the Canucks were able to sneak Andre Kuzmenko into the Calgary deal and relieve themselves of $5 million that was on their books for this season. Like, those things have value, and it speaks to how the Canucks are already thinking with one eye towards the summer of what they might want to do to add to this roster.
Well, when you move a foundational piece like JT that has to be replaced, your entire plan now becomes replacing him. And we discussed this, you know, the past couple of days here, but to replace him, you also have to have the flexibility to do so. And when you look at all the Canucks' needs, right, like it's signing Marcus Pettersson. They want to sign Drew O'Connor as well. And if you want to keep Brock Besser or not, still, like, that's a situation you have to deal with one way or another, right? And then you have Kevin Lankinen. Yeah. So these are four players this team is interested to varying degrees to sign and keep. But that's just to keep this team.
Yeah.
But you want to, you need to add to the team.
Yep.
Well, if you want to add that impact center who's going to be making anywhere from $6 to $9 million, that's the range for a big-time player you're looking to add, right? You need a bit more space. And we kind of outlined this during, you know, the open about where the Carson Soucy thing fits in. And this is now after moving Heinen and Desharnais. And I'm not giving them credit for fixing their own mistakes, because ultimately signing Kuzmenko to that deal ended up not working out. So you moved the money out, but you fix your mistake, right? Same thing with Heinen and Desharnais. Didn't work out, but now you're moving on from it. I'm not going to sit here and say that's an amazing work, but at least you got out from your mistakes, and I think that's a good thing. So the money to sign Marcus Pettersson, most of it's going to come from Heinen and Desharnais.
Yeah.
There is no way the Canucks were going to be able to sign a Pettersson, keep Besser, keep Drew O'Connor, keep Lankinen, and also add somebody else unless they moved off Heinen and Desharnais. And that brings us to Soucy.
Yeah.
They kind of need to move another $2 to $3 million if they truly want to keep all those guys and add that impact player and not just be forced to look at players with smaller cap hits. Now it gives you an option to not only keep Besser, sign all those guys, but if you were looking to add a guy making $7, $8 million, or $9 million even, you have the flexibility to take that on.
Maybe that answers Rich in Cloverdale's question, wondering if it's really Soucy that is on the trade block or if it's Elias Pettersson, the one that's being showcased without us even knowing it. Rich, I think they just really like what they're seeing from Elias Pettersson right now. And, you know, the reason, biggest reason Carson Soucy finds himself on the trade block, well, yes, poor performance, but also, like Sat mentioned, opening up that extra bit of cap space can be pretty valuable to this Canucks team if they can make that happen before the March 7th trade deadline. And it'll be a lot easier to make that happen looking ahead to the summer when his no-trade clause goes down to a modified no-trade clause, which will be just 12 teams. A lot to look ahead to. Canucks and Colorado Avalanche here tonight. Colorado currently in the first wild card spot. And if you're thinking about playoffs, like the Vancouver Canucks still are, even though they are very much in a retool right now, Colorado on 64 points. If they win here tonight, even with a couple of games in hand, the Canucks will be 8 points back of the Avalanche for the first wild card spot. So, you know, that's a pretty big hill to climb.
Yeah, if you want to have any sights of keeping them within reach, you kind of have to win this one.
Yeah, it's either that or you're sticking it out for the first or the second wild card spot and maybe catching the LA Kings in one of those top three spots in the Pacific. We'll dive into the pregame topics. No Quinn Hughes for the Canucks as they take on the Colorado Avalanche here at Rogers Arena. The pregame is next on the Sportsnet Radio Network.